Okay, we're at the appointed hour. Let's go ahead and get this started. And I'm Ernie Perkins. I'll be serving as the acting chair today, as this is the hub and the origination point for the meeting. And we have one topic today in this board meeting, and one topic only. That's whether or not the current female harvest on the Southwest Manti Cougar Management Unit, one of 10 units on the Wasatch Manti, warrants a closure. And we're not here to discuss the Cougar Management Plan, or deer, or bears, or the LaSalles, or any other topic. So we're going to keep tightly focused for today, and all those other topics will become open and fair.
Yeah, you need to tell Ernie we can't.
Next year.
I mean, we can just barely hear him, but I don't think you guys can hear him. Okay, I'll turn on mute.
Okay, basically I just said there's only one topic today, and that's a potential closure of the Southwest Manti Cougar Management Unit. We're not here to talk about...
Did we lose him?
I think so.
Okay, John.
Is anybody up?
There we go. I can hear you now, Ernie.
Okay, we're flipping switches over here, I think. And maybe they're all right now, so I'll try it one more time.
Ernie, the volume is really low here in Price. I can barely hear you.
Okay, hold on one second, Mike.
Local thing.
Mike, I'm told that you should turn your TV up a little bit, the volume.
Okay, I'll do that.
And turn your mic off until you need to use it.
Okay, I'll try one more time here. Am I coming in weak for anybody, or are we set to go?
You sound good to me, Ernie.
Good.
Hey. This is Calvin in Springville. I can hear you loud and clear.
Very good, Cal. Thank you. Okay, Ernie Perkins, I'm serving as acting chair because this is the hub for this meeting today. And we have... I think it's 11 members of the public here at the meeting in Salt Lake City. So we're here for only one topic today. That's to discuss whether or not we should have a closure on the Southwest Manti unit due to the female harvest that we currently have. I would like to advise everybody that we're not here to talk about the Cougar Management Plan or bears or deer or any other topic. So let's keep focused on the one topic, and we'll get that taken care of. And I'll start with introducing the board and checking them in. Del Brady from the Northeast region is attending at the regional office in Vernal. Del, are you with us, and have you got both audio and visual now?
I can hear you. Ernie, if you can hear me.
I can hear you and see you, Del. And Boyd, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
And Mike King, Southeast Region, is attending at the regional office in Vernal. Mike, how about you at this point?
Yeah, we can hear and see you. Still, the volume's a little bit low, but it's maxed out, so we should be okay, though.
Okay. And Jake Albrecht is with us via telephone, calling in. Jake, you got us fine?
You're fine here.
Thank you. And Calvin, or John, John Bear is with us by telephone also. John, how are you doing at this point?
Good. I can hear you good.
Very good. Calvin Crandall is attending via the Central Region office in Springville. Calvin, how are we?
Doing good. Can you see me?
Not yet. We're still on the Northeast region. They're probably about to flip it. We're doing okay.
Great. I can hear you fine, and I can see the Cougar presentation.
Yep, very good. And Bill Fenimore from the Northern Region is here and present in the Salt Lake office. as is Director Greg Sheehan, the Executive Secretary for the Wildlife Board, who's also here and present in Salt Lake City, Stacy Coons and Tu Vo are with us, acting as administrative support, and we appreciate the help in getting the meeting organized. So let's get on to agenda item number one, approval of the agenda. I would add that under other business, if there is time permitting, Director Sheehan may give us a brief update on a few items. So, and let's do it by consent. Does anyone have a change to the agenda? And hearing no voices, no comment, the agenda is adopted. So let's get started with the today's action topic, the cougar harvest on the Southwest Manti, and a couple of items on meeting management here. We'll get a brief presentation by John Chivik. Then we'll get questions on the presentation. I'll go to the board members first in the same order that I checked them in and ask if they have questions. This period is for questions only, not statements or opinions or recommendations. And then after that, I will go to the public here in Salt Lake City and ask if you have questions. Again, questions on the presentation only, not a point for presentations, recommendations, opinions, so forth and so on. And as a bit of advice, I do plan on allowing three members of the public to speak for 5 minutes each, and you can decide between you who you wish to represent you on that. With that, John, would you proceed?
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. So today we'll talk just briefly about what we've been looking into relative to the cougars on the Southwest Manti unit in particular. I have to give a little bit of background in terms of the cougar management plan and how we make decisions relative to this species. Essentially, the cougar plan tries to manage cougar populations but incorporates some of the more developed science in terms of managing for source sink dynamics. And what this is where we have areas where there can be high cougar densities and areas where there could be lower cougar densities. Also, it acknowledges the size of cougar home ranges and how much they can range and move about. So it tries to incorporate larger management areas. Also on longer time scales where you have animals that aren't being reproductive and adults and settling in until they're 3 years old or so. It tries to acknowledge that. It also acknowledges the importance of females, adult females, for population persistence, and that we need to watch numbers of them to make sure the population is doing okay. Some of the issues that I've realized as they've gone into this newer cougar management plan in terms of larger scales, the plan is focused on the larger area, whereas a lot of us tend to think more in units and smaller scales. And that could lead to some confusion in how we look into these things. There aren't things addressed in the plan as far as which units should be more of a source area, you know, with higher populations, and which areas should be more of a sink area. There's a lot of things about the biology that we still that aren't really implicit in the plan, however. And then, of course, when I talk about the people can see that areas we're thinking of, we're talking about the Wasatch Manti, which is this whole area in here, but then the Southwest Manti just down in there, so the smaller unit within that whole big thing. The Cougar Plan relies on performance targets, things we're trying to hit in the population as far as we look at harvest. We're looking at the proportion of harvested females. We try to get that in towards 17% to 20% when we're adjusting our permit numbers. We also pull and see what the try to get a measure for effort, and that's in the form of cougars treed per day, and the aim on that is between 0.25 and 0.35 for the area. So we look at those numbers over a three-year period and adjust the permits at the end of the cycle. And there's rules towards that. There is a sort of a qualifier at the end of the plan. That is, if units are in a predator management plan status, it changes the numbers a little bit for any one of those. The Manti were put into a predator management plan a few years ago. We're now ending this cycle, but it's largely based on the deer being far below objective for that area. Cougars were listed as one of the species of concern in that predator management plan. And like I said, we're towards the end of that, but it does have bearing on how we manage cougars in this area. Basically, when you're under a cougar, under a predator management plan, performance targets are changed a little bit in the sense that a female subquota at 40-50% is fine. And I do have to note this is the female subquota. When we're counting animals as they're coming in, you're looking at males, you're looking at females, but we can't say whether it's an adult female at that time. We use adult female numbers to adjust the permits, but basically total females captured to put the brakes on. So the target would be greater than 25% of adult females taken when you're under a predator management plan, and that's different than what we showed earlier, 17-20. But there is an option, there is a way to put the brakes on, even if you're in a predator management plan, that is that the adult female harvest is greater than 40% on a unit. That gives us a note that we might have to slow down a particular unit. Okay, so relative to the predator management plan, I do have to say where we are in that and how the decisions are made relative to deer survival. The predator management plans, the rule was revised a couple years ago. We're shifting into the new mode of doing it, which has triggers on survival of deer. But for background, the deer survival 0.9, 0.87, 0.8, average deer survival in that area 0.86, that's above the 0.85, that's above the 0.80. So the deer and the unit are actually doing fine. And as we move into the new revising our recommendations for this year, I suspect we will be out of a predator management plan for this area. Now, relative to the specifics of the harvest and the Wasatch Manti, again, we have to look at it by area completely at first. And this is the way the plan looks at it. From the 2010-2011 year, 108 animals were harvested, 40 females, so 37% adult females. The second year, we can just focus on that adult female number there, 26% adult females, 97 totally harvested. And this current year, we have to remember that we're in the middle of the harvest objective portion of this, so we're still on our way and all the results are preliminary. 66 have been harvested up to date, 25 of them have been females. The best I could do with the percent adult female is look at our check-in data and what our estimate of animals that are actually going to be those adults are. And we're thinking it's about 19. So it's probably, and this is real preliminary, probably about 28% of them area-wide were adult females. So we're sort of within our ranges that we want to see. Okay. Southwest Manti, that's the topic of the talk today or of our discussion. This one in particular, 2010-2011, 8 total harvested, 13% adult female. Notice as you move down to just the unit level, one animal really changes those percentages, and that's one of the things that makes it important to look at it at a larger scale, because you're talking about small numbers, so just one or two females can change percentages drastically. 2012, percent adult female, 16%. And then 12, 13 of our, we just had another animal reported yesterday. So it was up to 13 total, 7 of them females. And our preliminary female thought is around 33%. And this could go one way or the other really quickly just with a one female harvest, as I said. So as far as the best we can do in terms of an analysis of the question here, and recommendations. Biologically, it looks like there is a potential for a peak in female take this year on that Southwest Manti unit. However, especially if we think about this in terms of predator management plans, we're within the numbers are within our plan objectives, it looks like right now, at least until we get that adult female actual estimate in. We're also still in the cycle. We're still analyzing data. I don't have the best information right now, and I won't for a few months until we're ready to make these recommendations, but this is the best I could do. Based on the numbers we do have, though, it looks like biologically at least, the area on an area-wide level, the group of populations are stable, at least based on those plan assumptions and those numbers that we use from the plan. However, I have to note there's a little more going on here than those basic numbers as well. And what I'm realizing, there's some social concerns, especially that the Southwest Manti unit is a different unit. We can think of a lot of the units that we have around the state where some are managed more towards trophies, some are managed more towards opportunity. And I think we have one of those situations here where we've got a lot of public input and a lot of public thought about how this particular unit is managed. And it's bigger than the biology and certainly bigger than me on this one. There's some questions that probably should be considered going forward in terms of should the Southwest Manti be a sink area, which it tends to be because it's very accessible and easy for people to get into, and some of the other units aren't as easy to get into. Other questions are if the harvest should be spread a little better over the entire area. If we have some units with a very intensive take and other units with hardly any take, if we're thinking about deer and those kinds of populations, have we gone a little too far on that source sink question? This is something I want to look at over the next few months as I put together recommendations.
I interrupt for just a second?
Absolutely.
This is Mike King. I'm sorry, but I think maybe Dale, your mic might be on. Sorry, John.
Okay, are we good now? Everybody hears me fine? Okay. One other thing I just want to note is a tremendous public input on this one. The houndsmen have been following me around kind of like white on rice for the last year or so, and has been a lot of effort at all the public meetings and the racks and everything, and that's a pretty unique situation to see that sort of public input, and I think that needs to be at least acknowledged and if not commended a little bit. They've also been tremendous in terms of their offers to help. They're right now helping me try to get some population estimates, some actual population estimates on some of these units on the Manti. So this has been more than just, this hasn't just been harping, and I've been called some names, it's true, but it's been much more than that in terms of trying to be part of the solution rather than just be a problem. So I really appreciate that from the houndsmen that are here. So what it really comes down to, in summary, biologically, within the whole Manti and even the Southwest Manti, deer are fine, cougars are fine, but we have to kind of balance it against this social pressures and what's going on, and that's where I think the board could help us by considering the social factors here and using that to decide how to best address the situation. And with that's the end of my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Let's start then with the questions from the board, and I'll go around in the same order. Dell, do you have any questions?
I have two. On one slide talking about the All Wasatch Manti Cougar harvest, it says for 2012-2013 there were 66 total with 25 female, and I'm assuming that's adult female, or is that just all female?
All female. So I don't have adults confirmed yet. We don't have those teeth analyzed yet.
Okay.
But down below that, it does.
Down below, I've got a preliminary estimate of what I think the percentage of actual adult females was.
Okay.
But that's preliminary, so I don't, you know.
The second question I have is on the next page over, there's the Manti Cougar harvest area. For 2012-2013, shows on the screen we got 13 total so far, with 7 of them female. That percentage is more like 54 rather than 33. Granted, it's preliminary.
Right, exactly. No, and thank you for pointing it out. That's the important aspect here. That 33% is based on the proportion of adult females that are typically in the take of total females. So that actual proportion is probably going to be somewhere between 33% and 7 out of 13, you know, at 50-something percent.
So it's going to be somewhere in there. And that's why I tried to highlight the total female and really highlight this as preliminary. We could be somewhere, we could be somewhere within 40-something percent there.
Okay.
Like I said, one more adult female, two more adult females, and that percentage could change drastically based on those small numbers.
That's all my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Dale. Mike, Southeast region.
I just one question, and maybe this has already been covered, but we're talking specifically here in actually the slide that's on the screen right now about the Southwest Manti unit. And I heard John say that biologically cougars are doing okay and deer are doing okay. What were the deer doe to fawn ratios in that area after this past and buck to doe ratios, sorry, not doe to fawn ratios, but buck to doe ratios after the hunt this last fall? And do you know what it is specifically for that particular area? I think you might have been referring to the entire area talking about the deer, but what's it like there in the area where we're really concerned about cougars?
Right. Now, sorry, I don't have those numbers just relative to that predator management plan, and it more looks into adult survival relative, because the way we look at cougar and deer relationships is where cougars are going to affect adult survival more than fawns or those kinds of things. So I just pulled that adult survival, and that's all I have in front of me, and I'd have to look those other numbers up.
Okay, maybe somebody could get that. I think Bill Bates is going to go look here, but you know, I'm just curious if what the deer situation is specifically without looking at the cougars.
John, I think Kevin's got an answer.
I don't have them, but I will see if I can find it. Ah,
okay. Kevin Bunnell's going to work on that while we continue then.
Okay, that's it for now.
Okay, then we'll move on and come back when Kevin's got an answer on that. Jake, do you have questions?
Just one question. The Manta unit went into a predator control on the deer unit probably 3 or 4 years ago, the way I remember. As soon as we reach a certain objective there, does it automatically come back out, or does it stay in there through the duration of the cougar plan?
It's through the 2010-2013 is what that predator management plan is. So it's going to come up for consideration. Just we'll be looking at it over the next month or two.
So it really should have no bearing. Today it should have a bearing when the cougar management plan comes back out, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks.
Thank you, Jake. John?
Yes.
Any
Can
questions?
You hear me?
Yes, John.
Yeah, John, are we not concerned that so much of the harvest is coming out of such a small portion of the units? I mean, we have straight across the valley on the sand pitch range where it's a lot harder hunting and the deer aren't in that great a shape. We're getting no pressure on the lions over there because you can drive across the road and hunt the easiest, biggest timber, most accessible unit in the state, and that's where all the harvest is coming from. I'm as concerned about not only are we decimating the cougars there, but shouldn't we be a little concerned also that we're not putting any pressure on some of these other areas that we want to put pressure on?
That could be a valid concern. That's one of the issues I was trying to bring up relative to the way the plan is written and addresses it. It basically says, yes, we should have some units that are hit harder and some units that are not as hit as hard, but it didn't really give us guidance towards how to choose them. You know, that begs the question, should the one unit, because it's accessible, be a sink just because it's accessible, or should there be a biological reason for it? And like you're saying with the deer and the way the deer are spread out and other concerns, those other concerns, don't want to step too far forward, but I would think as we go looking at forming new recommendations, some of these other things, such as what you've brought up, should be a concern as we're deciding which units are more of a source unit and which units are more as a sink unit, and what the limits are to it to make sure we've got the hunt spread out a little bit better and not just, you know, laser focused only on one easily accessible unit.
And then the other question I had for you is, when we formulate these, you know, the new proposals and that, when that comes up, how much weight are we going to put on the social issues? Because, I mean, there, and on this unit in particular, on the Manti, I know there's been, you know, some fairly intense conflict between kind of weekend houndsmen and outfitters and guys stealing tracks from other guys. And, I mean, nothing that really has anything to do with biological numbers, but has a lot to do with the quality of hunt, the quality of experience, and you know, some very, in my opinion, some pretty serious social concerns that are kind of a product of having, you know, having the ability to go hunt these units that are very accessible with good timber and good snow and allowing so many people. I mean, you can go there and pursue anyway, but when it's open to so much harvest, I think we need to be concerned about that socially. And I just wondered, how much is the social concerns going to play in the new recommendations?
Well, I obviously come at things as a biologist, but I'm fully aware that I don't live in a biological vacuum either, and the social aspects are important. We acknowledge it, for instance, with bear and our pursuit seasons and having our splitting up the pursuit seasons, doing the LaSalle, doing things a little bit differently in order to try to minimize conflicts between different user groups and things. So we absolutely acknowledge some of these aspects of it. And I think as we move forward, I think it's pretty important that we do address these things. I try to make the biology as much as I can the driving force, but all these other considerations are, of course, extremely important. We need to consider them too.
That's all I had, Ernie. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Calvin at the Central Region Office.
Yeah, I've got a question for you. We've just been discussing the source and sink aspect, that you have some areas that are under harvested possibly as a source, and then you have an area that's over harvested as a sink. Is this an area that you can over harvest maybe as part of your deer management plan to get your deer to come back? And will there always be a cougar there? Will they always fill in from another area if we over harvest this to help the deer out? Will that source still keep bringing animals in, if that makes sense?
That makes total sense, and that's basically the design of the area and the design of the plan, is so as long as you have places, if you're over-harvesting the whole area completely, then you can start really having population-based problems. If you have some places that are hit a little harder than others, then you can have them fill back in pretty quickly. These things do move around, they do disperse. But where those thresholds are in terms of how heavily we're hitting the whole area versus how heavily we're hitting a particular unit is something we sort of balance with that adult female percentage. So yes, they fill back in. I mean, that's basically the design of the plan.
Okay, and it kind of seems like maybe that's where we're at. We may want to over-harvest a little bit in this area to help the deer, to get the deer to come back, but you're still going to have some cougar there, because it's an easy place, easy access, as John mentioned. You can go there, you can cut tracks, you can pretty well get what you want, but other areas don't. But those other areas are going to become your source that the animals will still fill in.
Right, and but relative.
So I think that's just.
I'm sorry. Yes, exactly.
Go ahead.
The question was relative to what John Bear brought up, relative to this one is accessible to humans, so it's a lot easier to hit cougar on, and people might ignore some of these other units where you might want to have a little more pressure. Basically, the question comes to how much of a source is a source, and how much of a sink is a sink. Do you want those? You know, want a sink to really hit them hard, have zero cougars there, and the sources have no hunting pressure? That's a balance that we haven't really figured out in this plan right now.
You need more time to figure that out.
I
obviously you do.
Yes, sir.
So do we? I guess that's the $64 question we're here to decide. Do we close it off or do we keep hunting?
I believe so.
Okay. No, that was my one other question, and it kind of relates back to the deer. Would the public rather see more deer or more cougar?
Can I abstain?
and like I said, you may not
public?
Be able to answer
that's
that.
Rhetorical, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, which public?
Well, which public is the question?
Right, that's
right.
And that's what I mean relative to social concerns here. And this is, I would be, like I said, I don't operate in a biological vacuum. We absolutely take, we're here today because of public input and because of public pressure, and we're listening to these guys and listening to these concerns because of that. So, yeah, your point is well taken. I'm finding that wildlife management's often about choosing one species over another, and you know, we do our best to balance that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Calvin. Bill?
The one question I have, John, is the plan before us, from your perspective and all the data you've gathered so far, is functioning the way it should, and there's no biological changes that need to be made at this particular time. It's all centered around the social aspects, correct?
Yes, sir. I'd have to qualify that a little bit, though. It's the social aspects, but there's that whole source sink thing about how much of a source, but that is a social question, is decide what that balance is. There's biology involved in it, but it's about how we socially value one part of the biology versus another, just to clarify.
And let's come back. Kevin, do you have a figure yet for Mike King's question?
I don't yet. Heather's doing it. She'll send it to me as soon as she has it.
Thank you. Mike, we're going to have to get that then when it's available. And I would suggest that we proceed on with questions from the public here. And I'll have to ask all the public, if you want to say anything, you're going to have to come right to the mic, or the folks will not be able to hear you that are on telephone or out in the regional offices. And also for the board members, if you've got a question from one of the publics as they are asking a question, would you please speak up quickly as they're finishing, or you think they're finishing, so we catch them before they've headed back to their chair. Questions from the public. Yes, sir, step up, state your name, please, affiliation if you have one, and ask your question.
Yes, Andy Lane with Sam P. Valley Houndsman.
Wait till you're right there. Now start.
Andy Lane with Sam P. Valley Houndsman. John, if you could.
Well, no. If you'll stand
Ernie,
right
I'm
at
sorry,
the mic and ask your question.
We can't hear.
If you could possibly go back a couple screens to your deer survival rate. When we look at this deer survival rate.
Sir, would you start again with your name, please?
Andy Lane.
Sand
Pete Valley Houndsman. If you look at this deer survival rate, since you've been taking more lions, it would appear to me, however so slight, that this has went down. Is that right, John? Am I looking at that wrong? Has the survival rate went down slightly?
Oh, you can see it's gone from 0.9, 0.87, 0.80. There's some variance on that. Obviously, we're not particularly precise, but yeah, it's gone down through the years.
It's gone down as more lions have been harvested, it would appear to me. Could you go back to the screen that you pointed out, the females? Yes, right here. So 7 out of 13, this 33%, John, explain that to me. That math doesn't work for me.
And again, it's the same question about the total females on the slide relative to the adult females. Again, when we adjust permits, based on adult females. We can't get the estimate on what's an adult female until we have our teeth analyzed. So what we do here is there's always a proportion of those adults that are harvested that are sub-adults that don't go into the calculation. So just to kind of give the best estimate I could, it's probably when all said and done, if there is no more harvest, probably of those seven, you know, five or whatever are actually adult females, and that puts us at 33%. But yeah, you're right. Our adult female harvest is probably going to be somewhere between this 33% and 50 or something like that. Well, but I'm not sure yet.
Now or later? What do you mean? I mean, obviously we have a number of seven total females killed, 13. So what is that percentage now? You're saying somewhere between 30 and what? What is that exactly?
Yeah, no, it's 7 out of 13 is total females, but what we focus on, again, is adult females. Is the way the plan's written, adult females are what we had used to adjust the permit percentages. So I don't want to get bogged down in this because the total female and adult female are different numbers, but the total female does show you that we're harvesting females in there heavily. But what the board's going to look at, or what we're going to look at, is the adult female percentage, and our best guess of what that adult female percentage is going to be is about 33%. It's up considerably from the previous years.
So an adult female, so if it's a sub-adult female, it's not counting. So a female is not a female, is what you're saying. Well, I'm just trying to understand. I'm really trying to understand.
Now, good. Now, that's a good question as far as the biology of it. What happens with the subadults? So subadults are going to wander. Subadults are going to be more likely to die. So the driver in these populations are those adult females that are staying put, that are producing offspring. So once you get to that status where you're an adult female and you're producing offspring, that's when you count as a, you know, a contributing member of that population. That's the important metric for us. Are the subadults and subadult survival, all that stuff's important too, but what it boils down to is that adult female, the proportion of adult females that you have out there are what's driving the population. That's why we focus on what the adult females are for those numbers, if that makes sense.
So if these subadult females was to stay alive, would they be a producing factor later?
If they stay alive and stay on that unit. So there's those two things. They have to survive just natural hunting mortality, but they also have to not wander off and be someplace else, not be in that area. So when they're adults, they're there, they're that area, they're reproducing. So it's kind of like those other numbers are, I don't know, more noise in the system until you get to be an adult female.
Okay, that's all. Thank you.
John, do we know how many, say last year you showed three adult females were harvested. Do we know how many total females were harvested last year before you made that classification of adults?
Yeah, hold on one second. Total females, we were looking at 2011-12.
Yeah.
Oh, I've got this over. That's just the Southwest Manti.
Yeah, just on that unit, if you've got it.
Yeah, just a look at a different place. Seven.
So seven of 19 were females last year, and three were deemed to be
adult. Right, that's adult. Why we end up with those percentages. Yeah.
As we look at this year's data, we see seven females, again, harvested this time out of 13, but we don't know what that number will be. It will shrink from seven to something.
Probably to three.
Three or four.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, thanks for pointing that out, Greg.
Yes, sir. Step up to the mic, please.
How are you? My name's Jason Patterson. I'm the Sand Pete Valley Houndsman. And not to beat this to death on this sub-adult female, but the average age, I believe, was 1.9 years. Cats killed on that unit last year. And I believe you classify a female at 2 years old, 3 years old. Or a female has to be 3 years old before it's a female. I mean, biology is biology. That female is a female the day she's born. And to count her anything different is skewing everything. And your average female is bred at 24 months. Is that not true, John?
Sure.
Yeah. So why does it have to be three?
The answer to the question, I mean, we're looking at, again, I'm not sure how to answer this any better. You're right. There's a lot of other things that that are have an impact on the population, what's going on. There's roadkill, there's hunter kill, there's starvation, there's a tom can come in and kill one of these cats as well. There's a lot of other things that are kind of noise in the system. The simplest and most important thing is that adult female. Yeah, are all females important? Sure, of course.
But if she's bred at 2 years,
right.
Why isn't she
considered
a female?
It's in that 16, it's, we do.
I'm just trying to figure out why a female isn't a female.
Let me step in here for one sec if I could. I understand the question. It's a good question, and it's a good discussion topic. But it's really not relevant in that it is what the plan is based upon. The plan defines what we're doing as counting adult females as opposed to sub-adults. So therefore, we're now talking about whether the plan parameters ought to be changed as opposed to does the harvest on the manti warrant a closure?
See, that's where it is relevant, is because the harvest on the manti is seven females. But you want to take away from these seven females and guesstimate. And these guesses is what's wrong with the plan all the way through. I mean, we don't have a number of a per cat per deer ratio. I mean, nobody can tell me that. I've studied it all over. Some of the ratios are as high as 750 deer per cat. Some are as low as 30 deer per cat.
Okay, we're getting off, though, into questioning the plan. And at the beginning of this meeting, I said we're going to concentrate on one topic.
Okay.
Does the female harvest, including the adult female harvest on the manti, warrant a closure? The topic that you're proposing is going to get into is going to take a larger group and a lot more time, and is going to be a much broader discussion than I wish to get into today.
Okay.
So we don't have the time, the right expertise, and the right materials to get into the topic of whether or not the cougar management plan is constructed properly today.
It's a lot of females is all I'm saying.
That's
I'm getting at how a female is counted. I don't agree with that. Also, the 17 to 20%, I would like to know where that number comes from.
Okay, I'm going to redefine it again. We're not going to do the cougar management plan discussion and whether or not it's right or wrong or needs to be reconsidered at this meeting today. We have a plan that was agreed upon by the entire state, developed by a good committee that was put together. I believe from the emails that we got, it's pretty obvious that we have a good-sized group that doesn't understand that plan, and they need to be part of the process the next time that plan is worked, and John has already promised that that's going to happen. But that took evenings of discussion and background and studies being presented and sent home with the participants to develop. So we can't rehash that today. I just don't want to get there. It would be unproductive. And any decision that would be made based on a short meeting today would be the wrong way to make a decision. So we're going to stay with the plan that we've got. We're going to consider whether or not the female harvest on the manti warrants a closure today or letting it continue for the remainder of the season based upon what we know today.
Okay, so what do you need to warrant a closure?
Ernie, could I ask Jason a question while he's there at the mic?
Sure.
Jason, you live in Fairview, is that right?
Yes.
Do you ever hunt the west side of the valley down the sand pitch range?
Yes.
Would you rather hunt there, or would you rather hunt the south manti?
The southwest manti is where I spend my time when I want to go catch a cat. That is the nicest.
Why don't you hunt the other side?
It isn't near as good. It's not near as fun. It's very rough. You can get in some bad, bad places. And the face of temp is far worse. And I did help with getting rid of some cats on the face of Tampa when we planted the sheep when I was young and I was in good shape. That is not a place for me now. It's a lot of work. It's hard on dogs. It's cliffy. It is a place you pretty much have to be forced to hunt
You know, I know they've offered a lot of bonuses for people to hunt that, and they have to. If I got my choice of hunting that or hunting the Southwest Manti, you know what, I can take my wife and kids and go hunt Southwest Manti and have a great time. And not chance killing somebody or dropping them off a ledge or getting dogs tore up. It's a pleasurable place to hunt.
Thanks.
Okay. Any other questions, sir? By the way, I run bird dogs and I hunt chukar. And you're still a young man by comparison with where I'm at. And I worry about my dogs and rough terrain just like you do.
Chet Young, the Utah Houndsman Association. I got one quick question for you, John. Biologically and socially, does it make sense to shut down the Southwest Manti and force the pressure of the harvest for the remainder of the season onto some of these harder units, which we're seeing aren't getting hunted near as hard right now? That buys us a little time. We're still putting pressure on cats in other units, but socially and biologically, or when the plan comes back up for revision and kind of work the kinks out to force that pressure where we want it, like we've been talking, does it make sense both on a biological side for the future and a social side to shut this down and force people to hunt the harder units?
That's exactly the question we're here today to consider. Again, biologically, if we want to put pressure different places, it makes sense to do that. But then that social aspect and whether or not we go outside and respond to that, I think is really a question. I mean, it's a question for the board to answer. It would have an effect, and it would have, you know, slowing things down, looking at data. There's all sorts of things we can do, and that's really what the board's here to consider.
Jason Binder, Utah Houndsman Association. How do we determine whether an area is a sinker source?
That's a great question, and that's one of the things that we're looking at. I don't have real good numbers on that, other than if you're hunted heavily, a lot of cats are taken out, and there's going to be a higher proportion of females in the harvest. That's going to end up being a sink. They're not going to be able to sustain themselves without other cats coming in. Another place where the harvest isn't as high and you have a surplus of females that can emigrate, that's going to be a source. And we can tell that from, we'd be able to tell that from the numbers, from those ratios of adult females.
So basically what we're saying is we could be sinking a source unit. If the Southwest Manti is feeding these other units that aren't getting hunted as heavy, but it is a source for lions, we're killing off our source.
That's a really interesting point. So what could happen, and this is actually something we really should think about as we move forward. You definitely can have a place where you've got a very good condition for cougars that would be a natural ecological source, for instance. In other places out, you know, where there aren't any deer or there aren't any, you know, isn't anything to eat, that would be a natural sink for cougars. We could actually, through our management, turn what would be an ecological or natural source into a sink by hunting that heavily and having surrounding places where cougars would ecologically go to die or wouldn't be able to survive. You could have two sinks next to each other based on our management. That's an interesting point.
Another question I got is, we all understand getting rid of the mountain lions is trying to bring back the deer. What is the coyote's number one predator other than man?
Well, famine is the biggest thing. You're saying cougars will kill them? They absolutely will, yeah. Yeah, in our Monroe study, cougars have killed quite a few of the coyotes down there.
So if we go into these units, the Manti was, when it was classified into the harvest objective, we had a fawn ratio problem. Is that not correct?
We're looking at those numbers. I'm not sure what the answer to that is. Do you have the numbers, Kevin?
Now, if you need
You come up, Kevin.
Can we have Kevin's information, please?
So over the last 3 years, I've got the data on the manti, and we don't classify the manti for deer by the subunits. They are it's for the whole manti. Fawn to doe ratios in 2010 were 73. In 2011 they were 64. And this last year they were back up to 72. So fawn to doe ratio at this point is growing. On you know you kind of draw a line about 60 fawns per 100 does. Anything above that is a growing deer population. Buck to doe ratio, which is the other thing that Mike asked for. Well, and so a three-year average on the manti for fawn to does is 70. Buck to doe ratios, 2010 was 14.3, 2011 was 14, and this year it bumped up to 15.6 for a three-year average of 14.6. So does that give the information you needed, Mike? Or was that for?
Yeah, it did. Now, tell me again, that was for what's the scope of the area?
This is the entire manti unit.
Okay. But that's not specific to the southwest.
Well, I can break it down to the west side. So we do break the manti because it splits two regions. So the central region side of the manti, which is the west side, but it's the entire west side, north and south. Fawn to doe ratios have ranged from, are a little bit higher on that side. They've ranged from 70 to 84. And buck to doe ratios have ranged from 11.5 to 13 over the last 3 years. So that's the entire west side of the manti. That's the closest, that's the finest scale that we have data for on the deer classification.
Okay, great. Yeah, that answers my question.
Okay.
So another question I would have is, if we go into these areas and eliminate these cougars like we're doing, does it not basically mess up the whole balance of the wildlife cycle? Since you have lions that will eat and kill coyotes, they'll kill and eat raccoons, they'll kill and eat skunks and porcupines, are we not upsetting the whole balance of nature by going in and wiping out the lions in certain areas?
We're getting kind of beyond the scope of the Southwest Manti thing again. But again, balance is in the eye of the beholder.
I would say on that. Many would argue the way that all of our management practices are undertaking aren't violating nature, so that's probably not an area that we as hunters really want to get into talking about some of those social dynamics of it, because there are a lot of things we do that probably aren't natural, whether we're looking at predator or prey relationships. So,
Jason, just to push that one step further, if you want to get into the wolf discussion, that's a continuous topic. So, yeah, well, I don't think that's a good
one. More question. Does everybody think a houndsman is just a houndsman? Do you think that houndsmen don't care about deer? Do you think they don't care about elk? That would be the ultimate question. We're all sportsmen. We all feel the same. Why is it we cannot balance all wildlife to have healthy populations of everything? Thanks for your time.
I'll answer that question. Jason, this board works on that every meeting, trying to balance it out. And there are many very disparate groups that have got their own feelings on what the balance should be, and as many individuals in each of those groups with differing opinions. And the board works very, very hard, as does the division, at trying to do that. It's not to say we're perfect. The answer to your question is, yeah, we all feel the same way you just expressed, and we all spend a great deal of time trying to do it.
Hey, Ernie, this is Dale.
Go ahead,
Dale.
Yes, go ahead, Dale.
I appreciate the offer to help. And having been a houndsman at one point in time in my life years ago, I know that when you get a cat in a tree, you can in most cases tell whether it's a male or female. And I think these houndsmen can help themselves and help us by just walking away and not shooting all those females.
Thank you, Dale.
Comment.
Question?
Aaron Johnson. I'm here with the Utah Houndsman Association. To that last guy's comment, I think all the houndsmen here do exactly that. The problem is over the last 20, 30, 40 years, hunting's become a very lucrative business. And the females are being harvested primarily by outfitters that are trying to put food on their tables for their kids. And we understand that too. And you're right, the houndsmen can walk away and do walk away and leave the females. This whole social issue, I want to thank Jim for everything that was said. It is a social issue. There's no doubt about it.
Questions?
Yeah.
Only?
Just questions?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Maybe I'll sit down.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much. That appears to be the end of the questions. Mike, your question was answered.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. So that does us on the questions on the presentation then. Okay, I'd like to open it up for three folks. You pick out who to come on up and give us 5 minutes each on your recommendations, rationales, and so forth and so on. And Stacy will be doing the timing, and I'm going to cut you off pretty quickly at the end of 5 minutes, so pace it.
Okay. I don't think that I'll use all that time. I appreciate all of your time, and I realize that this is a huge effort to gather everyone together. My name is Dan Cockane, and I represent the Utah Houndsman Association. I'm the Lion Coordinator. You heard from me before at the RAC meetings, at the board meeting. Our position is that the Southwest Manti Unit is a blue ribbon trout stream for cougar hunting. And in this same biological area are areas that we're trying to raise bighorn sheep. And probably to no fault of any one of us here, we're decimating the blue ribbon trout stream, and we're leaving the sheep units alone and not harvesting the predators off of that. So our position would be, we would ask you for an emergency closure on the Southwest Manti based on the number of females that have been harvested. And as you know, we're all amateur biologists and ecologists and weathermen, and just looking at the weather, we have snow today, we have snow predicted for the weekend, and we just see that we're going to kill a bunch more females in the next few weeks if we don't have a closure. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Hello, you guys. I'm Jason Adamson again, San Pete Valley Houndsman. And I don't know if you guys got my email late last night or not. If you didn't, I guess I'll go ahead and read it to you. To whom it may concern, my name is Jason Adamson, and I represent the San Pete Valley Houndsmen. First and foremost, I would like you to know I'm not an anti who wants everything hunting shut down. That is the last thing I'm looking for. I consider myself a sportsman. Deer and elk are two of my favorite species to hunt. I love to bow hunt. I take it real serious. I hunt hard. I love the deer. I do. Don't get me wrong. I work hard. I've taken several deer over 200 inches with a bow and several elk over 350. I'm a serious hunter. I'm not one of these deer hunters, but that's all I want. I love to hunt everything. If you've got a tag for it, I'm probably going to be hunting it. And I want every species to be just strong. And that's where, as far as these cats go, it's the reason I'm so heavily involved. I've hunted cats for 25 plus years. I guided for 25 years. And I killed a lot of cats. I did. I hammered the cats. I'm a lot of the problem. I'm the first to admit it. But you know what? When I can see this resource disappearing, there's a time when I got to go, hey, it's
doesn't hold a candle to where it was. And to see what's happening on the manti is being slaughtered. And it was a fantastic unit. It was a unit that took 10 years to draw. Excellent, excellent unit. Great time, great place. I mean, Ernie loves to go and hunt chuckers. You know, what if we did that too? Where he hunts these chuckers and these dogs just sit on the end of the chain. You get a fresh snow and you don't even feel like going. I'm just kind of skipping through this. Now I'm coming to you as a hunter who sees a great resource in trouble. Believe it or not, I get the same rush from seeing a giant tom bait on a ledge or watching someone who has just seen their first lion of their lifetime. Maybe a 5-year-old kid, an 80-year-old man who has hunted deer his whole life. Never seen one is an incredible experience you will never forget. I would like to see future generations enjoy this also. The manti is different from the units it's lumped together with. It was a premium cougar unit with a lot of public access, kind of unit we could hunt as old men or have a great chance of the whole family seeing a cat without hiking for miles. It took 8 to 10 points to draw. 4 years ago, we had a great cougar population. Now, thanks to this plan, the outlook is pretty grim. There's a big difference between the manti and the sheep units. The sheep units have very little access and are straight up and down and full of ledges and holes. So you get ledged, your dogs get ledged or go in a hole and get torn up. Normally you start walking before daylight and get back to your truck after dark, if you're lucky. The manti is a pleasure to hunt. The units it's combined with are a nightmare that no one will hunt unless there is nowhere else to go. Cougars are the easiest population to control. All we have to do is see a track. Very seldom do they get away after that. There are some problems with this management plan that are decimating the Southwest Manti unit. It's like making the Henry Mountains a general deer tag. And not only let's make it a general deer tag, let's make it either sex. And give doe tags also. What do you think would happen to it after 1 year, let alone 4 years? Yes, it would be decimated and no longer a tag worth having. That is what has happened on the Southwest Manti. For the last 4 years, it has been heavily over-harvested. In the Sanpete Valley houndsmen have agreed to put their money where their mouth is. We have organized a group to gather DNA for genetic testing on these cats that will cover the entire game management unit and give you much more accurate count on these cats. It will be the largest study you have ever had on these cats, at no expense to anyone but the houndsmen. But if you choose to ignore these numbers and the facts that you have now, what is the point of better information? Last year, there were 18 cats harvested on the manti. This year, so far, there have been 12. 7 of them are females. According to John Shivick's numbers, there should be a 17 to 20% female harvest. As of right now, we are at 60% female harvest. If you were to set a quota for this, it would be equal to 41 lions or 7 female subquota at 17% females. It was set up to have 9 lions taken off the Manti Southwest, but has equaled out to the damage of 41 lions on a 9 cat quota in the two. Let's see. That is a gross overharvest.
And your time, could you wrap it up, please?
Yes. There's 9 subunits in this game management unit. On these units, the manti has absorbed over 30% of the total harvest, which means only 8.75% of the cats have been harvested on an average in the other 8 subunits. So we're putting all the pressure on the manti and nothing elsewhere, which we've talked about. As for saying we don't have a true count on the females, I don't need to go into that again. The plan has created a mess between the guides and the average hunters. The guides want to kill everything they catch, and the rest of us are watching our lion hunting disappear fast. With lazy guides killing everything they catch, now there's fighting every weekend, and it's gradually getting much worse. The houndsmen are trying to control this. When he brought that up about the female walking away from the tree, there's a lot of us that want to, and that's what's creating the fight, because there's a lot of us that won't.
All right, sir. Thank you.
Can I tell you one more thing about a CWD study?
10 seconds.
He only took half his time, so can I have the rest?
10 seconds.
There's a CWD study out of Colorado that shows that these cats kill a higher percentage of deer with CWD than automobiles or hunters. They're taking these deer out, which makes our deer herds healthy. All I'm asking you guys to do is look at the numbers and take care of us. It's pretty obvious.
Thank you.
Jason Binder, Utah Houndsman Association. Looks like I got a pat on the back from all the guys that get up here and talk. We've been over some really interesting topics today. And one thing I definitely think we need to look into is deciding whether these areas are sink or they are sources. You know, if we're going to go in and wipe out these areas as our sources, we're decimating our population in areas. It creates, like I stated before, it creates a whole total imbalance of wildlife population. It creates predator and prey dysfunction. I mean, we've already stated here in the state that coyotes are out of control. The mountain lion is the number one predator of a coyote. When the manti went into harvest objective, every houndsman threw a major fit because the study showed the adult survival on deer was perfectly balanced, was perfectly fine, and the fawn ratio, there was no fawn survival, and that was a major trigger, and the division even admitted it right here in this room that we had a coyote problem on the manti. But we overlooked that, so that way special interest groups, such as deer hunters, we did a harvest objective for lions, when all we done is created a major imbalance in the whole region down there. The manti used to be one of the most sought after lion tags in the state to draw. It used to be published in Outdoor Life and Field and Stream. Go to Utah, harvest a 15 plus inch scold tom on the manti. What is it now? Manti is nothing. It's been over harvested, it's been over hunted. Lions have been killed off there and turned in on other harvest objective units. Nothing's been done about it. There's wet females turned in every year that have obviously been killed, turned in that had kittens. There's no tickets issued. There's nothing done about the over-harvesting, the illegal harvesting of lions in this state. And as houndsmen, we are standing here saying, why? Why is this happening to our sport? You know, we all want to see 30-inch bucks. We all want to see 380-class bulls. You know, nothing better than going out with your buddies and going around the corner and seeing a 30-inch buck. I want to shoot a 30-inch buck one day, and I want to do it in my own state, just like I want to kill a big lion. I've had hounds for 20 years and never killed a lion or a bear. And a lot of these gentlemen in this room are the same way, and they're passionate about their sport. They want to be able to go out. They want to take their kids. They want to catch a lion. They want to take their kids out and let them shoot a 30-inch buck with their bow and arrow. These are all things that are important to houndsmen, and we would like to see, you know, the division step in and close down units such as the Southwest Manti that are obviously over-harvested by females. We don't know the exact data whether they're adults or whether they're sub-adults. When we do the bobcat numbers, we look at every female killed, whether it's a sub-adult, whether it's a juvenile, and if the female quotas on bobcats, whether they're juvenile or sub-adults or females, they're all counted. This is something we definitely need to look at in counting numbers on these units. If we've killed seven females it is. Like it was stated, the average age is 1.9. Well, that's never going to be an adult, so how are we going to count it, and how are we going to know the exact devastation we are doing on a unit if we don't count all animals, whether they're 5 months old or 15 years old? The data is still important. And that's one thing that these houndsmen have come to me and come to Chet and come to the houndsmen's club and says, you know, there's loopholes here, and our units are getting over-harvested, but all the cats aren't getting counted. Why? That is something we need to look at. And, you know, as on a houndsman's side standpoint and being part of the Utah Houndsman Association, we really think the Southwest Manti unit should be closed. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for that. Okay, I'm going to close this off then to the audience. unless a board member wishes to call back an audience person and ask a question. And we'll open it up to the board. Before we entertain a motion or ask for a motion, is there anybody from the board that would like to make a comment first? And I'll go around in the same order. Dell?
Well, I think we can all work together. And I know that they're saying we're killing too many females, but I'm going to go back to it again. It wasn't me that pulled the trigger. So they need to police themselves somewhat. But I do feel like that we need to have some kind of a closure here. And in the future, it's going to have to be restrictive. But on the second hand, I don't want to raise deer to feed lions. That's my comment.
Okay, sure. Thank you. Mike?
I'm glad to hear the comments and the questions from the audience. I appreciate that, and I know that they're passionate about what they do. I wish I was that passionate about something. kind of hard to keep that level of energy up all the time. But I hope that all of this, and I'm sure it will, all this discussion will go into the next round of planning, which is right on the horizon as we start looking at this plan. And I think hearing these comments is going to be very helpful in future participation by you folks there in the room, as well as others that aren't here, and all of the different groups that are concerned about lion welfare. And like you say, there are lots of hunters out there, whether they're deer hunters or elk hunters or lion hunters or whatever, and some that are not hunters are interested in the welfare of lions. And all of those kind of perspectives need to be taken into account as we move ahead, and we want to have the best management plan possible. And the kind of comments that are being voiced are going to do just exactly that, help us get the best possible plan we can based on the best biological data that we have and based on all these social concerns and others that haven't been raised today. So I appreciate the opportunity to hear these comments and look forward to the plan as it comes forward to us here in the next several months.
Thanks, Mike. Jake?
Just a couple of comments. With the amount of cougars that are being taken on that southwest part of the Manti, it tends for me to believe that that is where the large amount of deer are concentrated probably also. And the taking, if I have my numbers right, was 19 total cougars last year. We're at 13 this year. I have a hard time believing that we're going to kill a tremendous amount of more cougars in the amount of time that is left on the calendar for this year. But that's all my comments.
Thank you. John?
Yeah, I obviously am pretty passionate about this issue myself personally. You know, we've heard a lot from the houndsmen, a lot of information and ideas and stuff, but there's a couple very pointed and basic reasons why I personally think we should close this unit right now. The first is it's a social disaster down there. If when guys are fighting over tracks, as soon as it opened up, the outfitters swarm that place because they can take anybody there. It's so accessible. There's tall timber. I mean, it is. You could not draw a lion unit any better than the South Manti, and that attracts a lot of traffic and a lot of attention. And there's been fights. There's guys fighting over tracks, and it's not good for sportsmen to have that going on. It's not good for any of us. And obviously, those involved need to police themselves a little bit. As houndsmen, we all need to police ourselves a little bit. But the kind of the nature of the beast, when you have a unit this accessible and so many tags available, I mean, that's where guys are going to go. The second thing that I am very concerned about, as a deer hunter, just on the other side of the valley on the Sandpitch Range, I got guys with CWMUs and private ground begging me to get lion hunters. Please send guys over here. Our deer are hurting. You know, we'll give them the key to the gate. We'll do whatever we can. We need to get some of these cougars out of here, and guys won't go hunt it because it's too hard and they can go hunt the manti. And if we are really concerned about our deer, if we're really concerned about our deer killing all these cougars on one little spot, we're putting tags on year and a half old females that are, that have a good chance of dying of, anyway, of natural causes being that young, when we could be putting those tags on adult cats that are killing machines. And if we're really concerned about our deer, those are the cats we ought to be tagging. And there's plenty of other areas on the Wasatch and on the Nebo that the deer would benefit from spreading this pressure out. And I know, you know, some of us are concerned about making sure we kill enough lions. Well, by hammering one, it's like mowing one corner of your lawn down to the dirt. I mean, it doesn't do you any good. You burn that off, and eventually it'll fill in, but it takes a long time while the rest of it goes unchecked. And I feel like that's what we're doing with our lion and our deer population. We're not keeping anything else in balance. We manage our deer in small units so we can keep it in balance. But where we have the manti open, a unit that guys can't draw now with 10 points, it's so popular. I mean, guys are going to flood there. And as long as this is open, every snowstorm, there's going to be fights. There's going to be people there. Every female is going to get whacked off that unit. And the rest of the Nebo and the Wasatch that needs some pressure is going to be untouched. And we're not doing our deer herd any favors on these other areas that need some pressure on the predators if we allow everybody to go to the easiest unit. And I think it's a no-brainer. I kind of figured this would happen. We told the houndsmen that when it did happen, we'd address it. I appreciate everybody showing up, you know, to the meeting and the director and Ernie and everybody putting this meeting together. But if we're really concerned about our deer, we need to spread some of that lion hunt, some of that lion pressure out over these other deer units. We're not doing those deer on the west side of the valley any good by just hammering the east side of the valley. And so that reason and then just the social disaster that it's turned into down there, I think are two very good reasons why we need to have a closure. And that's all I got.
Thank you, John. Calvin?
Just sitting here listening to this, is John Shivick, you're still there?
Yes, he is. He's coming up to the microphone. Go ahead, Cal.
Okay, got one more question. How long does it take your to get your data back once you get a tooth to know whether that's a subadult or an adult? How long does that take to get back?
There's a
and if go ahead.
I'm sorry. There's a gap. What we do is we wait till the end of the season and we send in everything all at once. So if it's taken earlier, it could be a few months still.
Okay, so it's going to take a while.
Yes, sir.
So this, you know, you've harvested 7 out of the 13 are females, but you don't know for sure if all of those are adults, correct?
That's exactly right.
So we could already have reached that objective by now.
Yes, sir.
But we won't know till after the harvest for sure. Is that correct?
Right.
Okay. I can say that was my only question. So we could already have reached that, but we won't know until after the hunt's over.
So what? Right. So the hunt will be going for May, and then all our teeth will go in, and then it's this July is when we're going to start to make the recommendations. So by that time we'll have pretty much all the data and everything will be back and all the ages. And then we'll be able to, those adult females are used to adjust the permits next time around. So that's when we need the data by before the next recommendations.
Calvin, Ernie here. Let me jump in for 1 second. I think we need a clarification at this point. John, even if all 7 were adult females, under the current plan, we would not be closing the area due to female harvest because the female harvest limit, adult female harvest limit, is for the entire Wasatch Manti under the current plan, and we're still 14 females away. Is that true?
That's correct, yes, sir. So we'd have to hit the adult, we'd have to hit the female quota or the total cougar quota for the whole area. Any one unit doesn't matter under the plan.
Does that make sense, Calvin?
Yes, yeah, it does. Yeah, it does. Thank you.
Just the way the plan was designed and was agreed upon by everybody a couple of years ago. Bill? Great. Okay, I thank everybody for inputs. At this point, I'd like to have a motion either to do something or not to do something so that we have a, rather than just letting it drop and doing something by inaction. So,
Ernie, I'll make a motion.
Go ahead, John.
I move that we close the Southwest Manti today.
I'll second that, Ernie. This is Dell.
Okay, we have a motion by John, second by Dell, to close the Southwest Manti Harvest Objective Unit effective today. Discussion on the motion?
Ernie? Dell again. I just think when we say today, that means today. And that means that somebody's going to have to post those roads or access into their ASAP. So we got the snow coming. We don't have a bunch of people down there hunting this weekend.
I've been waiting for hands, and I got one finally. Kevin Bunnell, recognized?
Dale, the way that works is because it's a harvest objective unit, we post it online what's closed by noon each day. We've still got plenty of time today to post that. And it would close starting tomorrow. There's no way to, if there's somebody out there today that's hunting, you know, it would be impossible. But we could post it online as being closed, and it would begin first thing tomorrow because the system works is we have to post that by noon each day for what's been closed for the following day.
That's fine. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, and I knew that. I guess I should have clarified knowing that if we made the motion to close it today, that would be posted by noon. So anybody that goes out hunting tomorrow, you know, should call and check in and see what the quota is and make sure they're legal to hunt tomorrow. So if we take action today, by the time anybody goes out tomorrow, they should know what's going on.
All right, then. May I restate the motion? The motion is that we close the Southwest Manti Harvest Objective Unit effective on Friday, March 22nd. Is that correct, John and Dell?
Yes.
Dell?
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And Mr. Chairman, just to speak to the motion real quick, this is as much to put pressure other areas where we need it as it is to alleviate the pressure both socially and on the females on the Southwest Manti. That really is a concern for myself and a lot of people I've been talking to, is that there's, you know, we've by creating this sink, we've really taken the pressure off some other areas where they're really, you know, we would be well served to have some pressure. So, and that's all I have to say.
Any further discussion from the board members?
Well, I have a question about what John just said. I guess I would be interested to know how many hunters would go to these areas that are hard to get to now and how many lions they would kill between now and May. Given the fact that they're so hard to hunt, given the fact that maybe the weather conditions aren't going to be very good in some of these places, maybe out west where there isn't any snow or won't be much. So I guess my ambivalence towards that is that I don't know how many would actually do that, would go and put pressure, and how many would actually kill lions in these other areas. So any ideas about that?
Well, if I might, Mr. Chairman, when outfitters have hunters booked and they know they're going to have a harvest objective tag, they know there's going to be units open, and when they book those guys and schedule them to come in, and I'm speaking from experience, that you come in and you find the unit with the best conditions and that's still available to you, knowing that some of these units are going to be closed. So you go find another unit. A lot of times that's just across the road. It's probably not your favorite unit to hunt because the easy units are already closed. So at least that's how it was when we had smaller units. And so as far as the actual numbers that are going to get killed, I don't think anybody can answer that until the season's over. But when guys have put down deposits and scheduled their flights and are headed to town, they're going to go hunt somewhere. They're gonna go get out on the mountain. It may be a little more difficult place, but these guys, and their livelihoods depend on it. So they're gonna go out and find a cat, even if it's in a tougher area.
Further discussion from the board members? And I'll call.
Yeah, this is Calvin. I would kind of issue or the echo what you just said, John. I would kind of put a directive to the houndsmen. Don't stop hunting just because you can't get the easy stuff. Go to the rougher stuff and prove yourself worthy that you can still get a cat in some of this rougher country. Let's keep harvesting and get some of the cats out of the rougher country and balance it out.
Okay,
that's my comment.
Thank you, Calvin. Anybody else? Okay, then I'm going to go around the same order again. A vote yea or nay, please. Dell?
Yay for Dell.
Mike King. Mike, we've lost you, apparently. I'm going to go on and come back to Mike. Jake?
Mr. Chairman, I had a no vote on this until John spoke up a few minutes ago about some of the other things that were going on up there, so I'm going to vote yes.
Thank you, Jake.
Let's see where it goes.
John?
I will vote yes.
Calvin?
I'll vote yes.
And Bill?
Yes.
And Bill Fenimore votes yay. And back to Mike King. Mike, are you with us now?
Yeah, I was with you before and I made a great speech, but I didn't have my mic on. I'm going to vote no, and I want to explain that vote. What we've been asked here to do today is to consider whether or not we should have an emergency closure for the Southwest Manti, and this is a population issue in my mind, a cougar population issue. We're looking at the health of the population and whether or not it's such condition now that we need to close this hunting season. The construct that we have to guide our decision is the management plan that, like Ernie has mentioned, has been adopted. It was accepted. It went through a long process to get to that point, and it guides currently the way cougars should be managed. And it's based on the best biology that has been available to us. And obviously, we don't know everything about cougars. We don't know everything about any wildlife population that we manage. And so it's important always to get more so that we can do better. But based on the biological constructs of the plan, I haven't been convinced that there's an emergency situation, that the population is in dire straits, that it's ready to disappear. And so based on that, I have to vote no.
Okay, I've got the no vote. Mike, thank you for the input and the explanation. The vote then is 5 in favor, 1 opposed to the motion, which is closing the Southwest Manti Harvest Objective Unit effective Friday, March 22nd, 2013, for the remainder of the season. Any further questions? That completes this topic then, and if the public wishes to stay, I'm going to offer Director Sheehan a few minutes for an update, and that'll be the last item in this meeting. Those that need to leave are welcome to leave as you see fit. Please go out quietly, and so the rest of us can hear Director Sheehan for a minute or two.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We've not met, as the Wildlife Board has not met since the first part of January. A lot of things have transpired, and I know everyone's time is valuable, so I'm going to move quickly through those to give you some updates that I think are important. First quick note, our Great Salt Lake Nature Center was renamed to the Robert N. Hosniger Nature Center after Bob, who got that center going a number of years ago. So that was a well-attended event, and I know some of you were there. Next, two items. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, since we've last met, has proposed the listing of it as endangered species or threatened species of wolverines and endangered species of Gunnison sage grouse, which occurs in San Juan County. There's been some public meetings on the Gunnison sage grouse that are opposition of that listing recommendation by the Fish and Wildlife Service. So it's been some amount of time since we've had listings of species in Utah, so that certainly concerns us, as we always take the position that the state should best manage our own wildlife, and we've done pretty extensive efforts, particularly on the Gunnison sage grouse, to avoid that listing. The Hunt Expo occurred in February. I think many of you probably attended that. I think it was a good event. There were the division has many activities that are related to that event. One is our National Archery in the School Shooting Program. We went this year from having about 150 youth at that meeting to over 600 that were registered to shoot bows this year. That was very exciting to have so many youth involved. Overall, I think the event went well from my view of it anyway, as I attended that. Last weekend was International Sportsman's Expo, and again, a good event to get some of our constituents involved in having activities to go see and be part of, and I think that went well also. We're working on a couple of statewide issues. One is turkey management. I'll address that in a minute when we get to a quick legislative update. We're working on some issues to help our condor populations in southern Utah with some incentive programs to encourage hunters in certain parts of the state to use non-lead ammo, as the lead is in some cases harming some of those condors. And we'll have more formal announcement of that, hopefully by the next board meeting. Our Southern Regional Supervisor, Bruce Brombeck, retired after 32 years. We've done some interviews for his replacement, and we'll make you aware when we fill that. The legislature just ended. There were several bills related to Division of Wildlife Resources that I wanted to give you an update on. One item that's been somewhat controversial in the media is was not in fact a bill, but an appropriation by the legislature to provide $300,000 of general funds to in a second year of that to effectively take efforts to avoid the introduction or continued listing of wolves into the state of Utah. The legislature and the governor have both made resolutions, laws, and letters from the governor expressing the Fish and Wildlife Service that we do not believe wolves are appropriate species in Utah, and we're working with the service to try to get them delisted out of Utah as they have been in Idaho and Wyoming and parts of Montana. There was a turkey bill passed. That
Greg, can I ask a question about that before you move on? I've read several of the articles that have been in the news about that, and one thing that came out of one of the articles, and I'm just trying to clarify this, it said in the article that, and this was one that was very early on, it said that the money, the $300,000, was going to come to the division and then pass from the division to whoever it is, Sportsman for Fish and Wildlife or Big Game Forever or whoever gets the money. Is that the case, or does it go directly to the group?
Yeah, the legislature has to appropriate any money that goes to some state agency, and then it could be directed elsewhere from there. So last year they gave us $300,000 for this. We put out a solicitation that was open to the public to come in and basically say what efforts have you done or could you do to help keep wolves out of Utah, basically. And Big Game Forever turned in a proposal through state purchasing and an open bid process, and was the only bidder on that. They did win that bid and were awarded that. And that solicitation allowed for future years, up to 5 years, if there was additional funding that came from the legislature, which there was this year. So those funds should go to Big Game Forever as well this year for their efforts to...
Okay, and one follow-up question on that. There was also quite a bit of discussion about transparency, the way that that money is used. Do Big Game Forever, do they have to provide an accounting of how that money is spent?
Yes, and thank you for bringing that up, Mike. That's important. When that solicitation was written, one of the criteria is that by June 30th of this year, they would report back to the division what successes or efforts that they undertook with that money to demonstrate that to the state. So that, of course, we've not hit June 30th yet, so that's not due. The legislature, before approving this funds again the second time, this $300,000 the second time, asked that the division and most likely Big Game Forever report to a legislative interim committee sometime later this year, so that they can ask those questions themselves. So that will be scheduled at some interim legislature between now and November, or probably between June and November. So, yes, there will be some accounting on that.
Okay, thanks. Sorry to interrupt.
No, those were good questions. The next, okay, jumping into a couple bills. There was a turkey bill that was sponsored by, House Bill 342, sponsored by Representative Rhonda Menlove from the Box Elder area. And the initial bill that came out directed that the board would have at least two general season turkey hunts per year, with that presumption being there would be a fall turkey hunt. It required mitigation provisions to deal for the division to respond within 72 hours to mitigation concerns by private landowners who had turkeys on their property. And it lastly allowed anyone who had a wild turkey on their private property to shoot the turkey at any time that they saw fit without a license or permit. We were able to work with her and eliminate the provision that said if there's a turkey on your property, you can shoot it. She ultimately dropped that. She did keep the 72-hour mitigation issue in there and said the division may have up to two general turkey hunts per year. So at this point in time, I think the bill did pass, and we'll begin to aggressively look at how we address mitigation complaints and issues that come in on wild turkeys. We'll be meeting with some local communities in the next month or so to talk about the measures we can take. Just to make everyone aware, though, the division has tried to work very closely with these property landowners, private property owners, and we moved probably in excess in the northern region of 350 turkeys this winter out of problem areas. So we certainly have been trying to be very aggressive in these issues. But there's complicating factors. Many individuals feed these turkeys, and that tends to keep them in neighborhoods. And so it's a complex issue, but I think we'll be able to move forward. Next bill that was of concern was a youth mentoring bill that provided, it was Senate Bill 61 by Senator Alan Christensen. The bill basically said that if you draw a hunting permit, and the board will have to define some rules as we move forward, but essentially if you draw a hunting permit, and that could be at this point any of those permits unless the board precludes that, that permit can be transferred to a youth who's either a child, grandchild, or a terminally ill child under the age of 18 and allow them to hunt with that permit, provided that the person who drew the permit is present at the time of the hunt. So that's something that we've talked about for quite a few years, the board has talked about, and I think that will be a good opportunity. There was a House Bill 90, a youth fishing bill that said that kids who are on school field trips can fish without a license. That passed. There was a bill, HB 365, that by Representative Mathis that allowed for swine hunting to occur around the state on private property for the release of swine to be hunted by individuals. That bill did not pass. There were a number of water bills out there that regarding potential access or use of water by the public. Those bills were put on hold until the court resolution it's moving through the process now to determine what some of the legalities are with our existing laws. There was a couple of resolutions. One on the Gunnison sage-grouse resolution by the House to not include private properties in that listing that the Fish and Wildlife Service has proposed. And one was delist the prairie dogs, essentially, and give those to state control down in southern Utah. I'll move quickly, almost done here. We've had a number of issues over the years with urban deer in many cities throughout the state. The most visible ones have been Bountiful City and Highland. We're drafting a new rule that could allow some city control over some of those urban deer as far as the harvest of those. We'll be bringing that rule out, not this coming board meeting, but the next one. There'll be a rule that would allow those cities to have some control over the deer. So that's a bit of a shift. We met with Highland City on this rule earlier this week. We'll meet with Bountiful this afternoon about this proposed rule. Last week we had a sheep summit meeting where we had anyone interested in our bighorn sheep issues in the state come in. That was widely attended. We had four board members here. I thank all of you who attended that. We had a lot of division people here from around the state and a lot of sportsmen, FNAWs, former employees, a lot of people. We had, I believe, over 50 people in attendance, and I think we covered some good ground there. We'll soon be having a turkey summit similar, so we can address some of these wild turkey issues that are occurring. I think some of you are seeing the translocation study that on the deer that were moved from the Parowan Face up near Holden and Fillmore. I'll keep you apprised and keep those weekly updates coming in. A couple interesting notes. Most of those deer have survived. We've moved about 100 deer into that area. None of them have returned to where they came from. A few died from capture myopathy. Some have died from predators, both coyotes and cougars. And this last week, two of those were shot and left in the field by poachers. So that was unfortunate to see. But most of the deer are still alive, and we'll keep those reports coming to you. The Monroe study, many folks are familiar with that, and we'll keep updates coming forward on that. And that basically addresses cougar predation on our deer herds. This year we announced that we'll be releasing $150,000 of pheasants and chuckers this fall for hunters to take, and we hope that we can revive some of the interest in chukar and pheasant hunting with those releases that we're doing. The big game application period ended this week. We had 357,000 applications. It's about 106% of the number that we received last year. So we've continued to grow in that area. I'll provide more details on resident, non-resident, what species, different things when I have that information. Last couple items, we're working on a release of mountain goats this year in a few places in the state, and we're excited if we're able to get that through. We're working closely on an issue of concern with the BLM where they've released an allotment of domestic sheep near our wild sheep populations, our Rocky Mountain Bighorn sheep populations, and 9 Mile and potentially down into Rattlesnake, that in our opinion violated the resource management plan for an area that could host domestic sheep. We're trying to get that resolved, and I'll report back to you on that. We're starting to work at a little bit higher levels with the BLM to get them to revoke that. Last item, I have Kenny Johnson, who's worked here for a number of years, has been accepted the position as my replacement in administrative services section. So, no, it's a lot of things, and I appreciate your giving me a moment to cover that. And I guess if there's any questions on any of those, I'd be glad to accept those.
Any questions from the board members?
Director Sheehan, Jake here. I appreciate your comments and the updates that we get from you weekly on some of the things happening in the state. But I have one question, and I know the Southern Region is listening. It's almost that time of the year where we have had the problems in Paiute County a year ago. Are we up to date on that this year and ready to go out and fight the problems that might occur and with what's coming up?
Well, the biggest problem that I think many are aware of is on a landowner, Gary Allen's property last year, there was some elk shot and some notification given the division, and we worked aggressively to avoid some of that. The division agreed to provide fencing materials to fence in all of his agricultural property, which is near completion, and I'm hopeful that we won't have any more issues there or through any of the neighboring areas. But it's certainly an area that at times of the year that our big game tend to move in to. Hope that's resolved, Jake.
Any further questions? Then this meeting is closed. I thank everybody for attending. Thank the board members for showing up all over the state. And thank you.